7 for 1.
So I started recording this because I did this yesterday and I wanted to record what I was about to say, and there's a whole bunch of people in here now that weren't in here before. So I actually remember this video. This video played in 1967 and I was a little kid when I saw this. It was still playing as a advertisement. But I want to talk to you guys about a loaf of bread, okay? And a loaf of bread is what's going to change everything. And what do I mean by that? The cost of a loaf of bread in the 1800s was you had to buy a piece of property. You had to have a couple of people come sow the field. You had to have a couple of people, cattle and whatever, bring water or nutrients to the soil to spread on the soil. And then when it was time to be cut, you had to have somebody go out there with some sickles and cut, dry it, grind it into grain, get other materials, and then make bread. Okay. So all the cost of the land and the sickles and the workers and all that stuff, that was under $250,000. Probably about $100,000, okay? But today, it's billions. So, what do I mean by that? Well, the smallest farm you can have to have a wheat farm is 1,000 acres. So, you have to buy a 1,000-acre farm. You have to have a house, buy a house. You have to buy an airplane to be able to drop the grain on the ground when it's time to plant. You are going to need tractors and spray rigs to put pesticide killers on there. You're going to need tractors to do levees and irrigation, disc up irrigation areas. Once it's grown, you're going to need a combine harvester, $500,000 combine harvester, maybe two, to go get it. You're going to need bank out wagons for the combine harvesters to go into. Then you're going to have to take it to a factory because there's no more grinding grain at home anymore. You're going to have to take it to a factory to have that built. That's a couple, you know, $200-300 million to have a bread grinding factory, wheat grinding factory. And then from there, you're going to have to take it over to the bread baking place. And then you're going to have to import a whole bunch of other stuff to make bread with. And then once the bread is made, you know, you can't eat all that bread. So you're going to have to take whatever you're going to take. Then everything else you're going to have to ship off to be sold. So the difference in baking a loaf of bread 100 years ago in cost between now and then is astronomical. Because of all the equipment we've now created to bake bread and to make a loaf of bread. So at that point, it is less costly to have a replicator. There will be people that will be doing little artisan bread companies where they make different kinds of breads. They put it in the replicator, the brand new first type of bread, they put it in the replicator. And now they have a program for that bread. So they can sell that program to somebody else so they can make bread. They can sell it for like a dollar for the loaf, or they can sell an unlimited bread license program where you could spend like $100 and be able to use that bread program anytime you want. That's how it's going to support people to come up with new things to be replicated. Is if they're going to get paid a royalty, or they're going to sell those little programs that you put in your replicator, or they're going to be developing new foods or new anything to be going into the replicator, because it doesn't just replicate food, it replicates clothes, everything. So there'll be a few inventors, but there will be no more of these major manufacturing. That's going to be gone. This is going to go across every area of our life. And as time goes by, the replicators will be bigger and bigger and bigger. So eventually, you'll be able to drive a car into a recycling replicator, which you put all your unwanted items in there, and it turns it to molecular power, which makes them changes the molecules around to make food or whatever you're going to make after you're ready to make a project. So in the end, while we're worrying about, you know, how am I going to get these pots worldwide so I can, you know, they can use these pots to feed the world, I realized that within 10 to 20 years, that's not going to be necessary. That project is going to be gone because we'll have replicators. People will be, you know, interested in saving the earth and try to be greener. So they're not going to want to have tractors and this and that. They're only going to want little tiny artisan farms, little tiny artisan bakeries, and all those companies are doing. They're not selling to the public. They're making programs, molecular programs of food and this, that, or the other. There would be, eventually it'll start out where it's a replicator, okay? And then it'll go from, you'll be able to buy a home replicator and a home capture unit that captures the garbage to turn it into an item. So it'll start with replicator and then the receiver to take the unwanted items to turn them into replicators. And then it'll be two machines, like a washer and dryer, be sold together. And then eventually it'll be one machine where you'll be able to drop the stuff in on the top or the side, and the other side will have the item come out. Eventually it'll be where you invented something and you put that in the replicator, code and a name, boom, 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 then it makes a program. So there's going to be cottage industries of people making things to go into the replicator to be sold to the general public. That's where we're going. So all of these things that we are coming up with, projects and stuff we're coming up with, realize that the replicators are going to change our world radically. So when you go back and look at Dave's ideas of the five things, five fields he thinks are going to take years and years to service, DNA repair, water repair, these are five communications, major things. But the biggest part is he's giving us an idea of what he thinks is not going to go away. So many of us are going to have projects that their lifespan is like, we're going to say, oh, you know, we're going to have 100-year lifespan or 200-year lifespan on that. But the reality of it is, no, we won't, because replicators are coming. That is what is coming. I have talked to two different people in the foundation on the phone. They know this is coming. They know one of the people that is working on this, and they're being told, whatever you're planning, don't plan on it going more than 20 years, because replicators will be here soon and then we'll replace most all of the projects that we're doing. Roads, healing, all that kind of stuff. There's a whole different group of people that are doing that stuff. But there is, you know, it won't be roads anymore. It'll be landing pads. There's going to be a whole group of people that are going to need to make landing pads at everybody's home to retrofit their homes for flying cars. Can you imagine? It's going to happen in our lifetime, folks. So, so freaking cool. So just realize that when you're thinking of your project. Now, is this a bad thing? No. Because there's some of us that are going to say, you know what? I only want to work to help humanity until it's on the rails. And then I want to retire. So maybe I'm going to stick with my project and give it a 20-year lifespan. I'm going to hope it's going to be 100, but it might. But in the back of my head, I'm going to be okay if it goes 20. And you'll be fine. If you don't want to do any of that, that's okay. You'll be fine too. You just have to figure out what you're called to do. I think that's different for everybody. We got Malcolm plugged in. I got a plan for Malcolm yesterday. So one more of you guys I got plugged in. There's quite a few of you that are plugged in now. We got different plans for you that we're going to move forward with. So everything is good, folks. I don't know why Ray never did give a reason as to why it didn't go, just that they were expecting it. They were told it was going to go. And then when it didn't, they checked in and they said, hey, we are expecting it tonight. The guy, the fireman, he's thinking it's going to be this weekend. I don't know, guys. I just don't know. I'm just going to go through the mail here. Awesome share. We're into this now on for President Biden's family received over $20 million from foreign sources. No! Lying piece of shit. $20 million? It's way more than that. They're just lying to us. It's way more than $20 million, guys.
You know, I think it's important to note that ISO 20022 is not necessarily new. It's been actually adopted by many low-value real-time payments or high-value payment systems in over 70 countries. However, what's significant in the next couple of years is that as high-value payment systems for major currencies, such as Euro, US dollar, and GBP, will be moving to ISO, all of a sudden we have a tipping point and a critical mass in that over 80% of the world's transactions or the world's payments will be processed through ISO standards. And so why should FI efficiency at the same time? Now, from a timeline perspective, I think it's important to note that ISO 20022 is not necessarily new. It's been actually adopted by many low-value real-time payments or high-value payment systems in over 70 countries. However, what's significant in the next couple of years is that as high-value payment systems for major currencies